from the theme park capital of the world, bringing you the latest in theme park and pop culture news. Welcome to the Thrill Geek Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Thrill Geek Podcast. I'm Clint.
And I'm Barry. I'm not Derek Bergen or Bergani or whatever his name is. So we hope you enjoyed the comedic stylings or the lack of comedic stylings of Derek. He can now go back to roaming the outlets and taking pictures of stuff and buying stuff.
Wow. Hey, we got Barry's back once again from traveling the world.
I left the continental United States, but I technically did not leave the territory of United States.
This is correct. Barry went down to Puerto Rico, as I mentioned in last week's episode, for kind of a mini vacation, and of course the main reason was to see Hamilton with Lin-Manuel Miranda. So we'll talk about that first thing here, and then we'll get into some other pop culture things. We're going to talk about Disney Oscar nominations. Disney Oscar nominations, rather. I can't talk. I'm tired. It's late. Disney Oscar nominations. There we go.
Yeah.
And then we got a trailer, Hobbs and Shaw, that just came out. So we're going to talk about that. And then we got a few little theme park things to talk about. So
plenty to blather on about.
Plenty for us to kind of blab on about. So, but first things first. Like I said, Barry went to Puerto Rico. And it was kind of a mini vacation for you, right? You guys made a little bit of a trip out of it. It wasn't just to see Hamilton. So how did your trip go down there?
It was pretty good. I mean, we spent four days there. Puerto Rico, I mean, we mostly stayed in San Juan, and Puerto Rico was beautiful. Picked the perfect time to go because the weather sucked here while we were gone. So
yeah, it has been. It's been overcast and cold. And was this your first time to Puerto Rico?
Yeah, it was both mine and Sin's first time to Puerto Rico, and so it's really cool to be able to go to a Caribbean island, and your cell phone works there. Unless you have Verizon. If you have Verizon, then your cell phone I think doesn't work there. But your cell phone works there, and you don't have to use different cash because it's a U.S. territory.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was beautiful down there during the day. It was like 75, 80 degrees, and we were like four blocks from the ocean in our Airbnb, so it was a nice breeze. So much amazing food while we were
there. I was going to say, every time I looked on Twitter, did you guys do anything other than eat while you were down there?
this was definitely the lazy vacation because it was outside of seeing Hamilton. We had no agenda, and we basically stuck to San Juan. We didn't go into really any of the other parts of Puerto Rico because we were just there to relax after the insanity of Tokyo. And this was the laid back, not do anything, go to the beach, go look at, you know, go to the old San Juan and walk around and see the forts, and which were amazing. I mean, it was crazy to see some of these structures that were like first built in like the 1600s.
You guys, I've heard before, and I know Puerto Rico is still kind of recovering from the storms. Did you guys see any of that, or were the areas you in kind of not? I've heard like kind of the outskirts of Puerto Rico are still.
Yeah, the outskirts are still pretty bad. There's definitely stuff in San Juan, like stuff that's some like houses and buildings that were damaged or literally wiped away.
Yeah.
By the storm, that we're still, you know, either in a state of disrepair or stuff. There's a lot of construction going on, you know, so it's there's definitely some things that were still, you know, a little out of whack, but for the most part, I mean, it's you know, it's everything's back to normal in San Juan. So like I said, you know, we were staying in this area called Ocean Park. That's like where beach is, and like four, literally less than a 5-minute walk to the beach. Had all these really cool, it's sort of like the more hipster area of San Juan. So there's like all these really good restaurants where we were. So yeah, we ate a lot. We actually spent more money per day on food there than we did Tokyo. It was actually the food was more expensive. Our meals were more expensive there than the meals we had in Tokyo.
Kind of on the same subject, Lin-Manuel, his reason for, there's a reason why he went down to Puerto Rico to do Hamilton. Can you tell us a little bit more about why he went down there?
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, his family's from Puerto Rico. He's Puerto Rican. You know, he would spend summers and other times of the year on the island. You know, with his, I believe his grandmother and other members of his family. You know, his dad is from a town in Puerto Rico that got hit really hard. And I mean, Hamilton was always going to come to Puerto Rico. I mean, his first show in the Heights, you know, I think it was like 10 years ago, came to Puerto Rico, and it was there for a week, and he performed in the show for a week. Hamilton was always going to come to Puerto Rico, but with the hurricane, everything sort of changed, and it became more about raising money. Because he'd done, you know, since the hurricane, he has helped raise like millions of dollars in relief, especially for the arts and other things in Puerto Rico. So
yeah, I see it right here, his Flamboyant Arts Fund.
Yeah. So, him being there, they use this as an opportunity to raise a lot of money, because you had like all these VIP packages and different, you know, different things that were there to raise money for Puerto Rico.
Oh wow, it says right here too. I got the playbill up in front of me,
yeah.
And it says that he even it says all profits from the Puerto Rico run of Hamilton will be donated to the Flamboyant Arts Fund. And 10,000 tickets were available via a digital lottery for $10 a ticket.
Yeah, I mean, normally when Hamilton like tours, like it's in Orlando right now, it's usually about 40 tickets a performance go into the lottery. That's $10 a ticket. Well, for Hamilton in Puerto Rico, yeah, they did 10,000 tickets. That was only in a lottery that was only available to residents of Puerto Rico to see the show for $10.
That's really cool. I didn't know that.
Albeit, we paid $175 each for our tickets up in the balcony, and it was worth every penny. You know, we had seen Hamilton last year in Atlanta, and it was amazing. It's one of those musicals you need to see live. And I have never experienced anything quite like the theatrical experience we had that day. The crowd was crazy. The moment he stepped on the stage, which I mean, I knew was happening, you know, that he would step on the stage and, you know, the place went crazy. It would go crazy. You know, and obviously they built, you know, he steps out the first time, you know, in the show and says, my name is, you know, what's your name? Alexander Hamilton. And, you know, the moment he walked on the stage, that place exploded.
Yeah.
And it turned into an over minute long standing ovation.
That's awesome.
And didn't stop until he like put his hand to his heart to acknowledge it. And then they started the play again, started up the play again.
All right, back to the show.
Yeah, I'm sure they knew that it, you know, the crowd was going to go nuts each night he stepped on. And even when I saw it in Atlanta, I mean, for some reason now, the moment that whoever is playing Alexander Hamilton walks on the stage for the first time, the place goes crazy. But this was unlike anything I've ever experienced. I've never seen a standing O being given in, like, within the first 5 minutes of of a musical.
Yeah.
But the crowd was, like, just... The energy in the room was crazy, and the crowd went nuts multiple times during the show. And it just, you know, it was amazing to see him do the show. I mean, you know, the person who originated the role, the guy who wrote, you know, wrote the show. To see even the, you know, I've listened to that soundtrack album God knows how many times. And just to hear the differences in the way he changed between the time that was recorded and now, and playing with the actors that played the different roles. Because, I mean, one of the interesting things with the show, I mean, every show that has every actor brings something different. But with Hamilton, they seem to get a little bit more leeway in the way they get to interpret their role.
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody, you know, everything's a little bit, there's some little bit different with people with different inflections and stuff like that. And I mean, the entire cast was amazing. The guy who plays, you know, the main antagonist, Aaron Burr, and really the main narrator of the story, he's one of the only actors who's ever played both Hamilton and Burr. And he's played like 10, 15 different roles in Hamilton on Broadway. So,
wow.
He was amazing, but in a completely different way than the last time I saw the show, and that Aaron Burr was completely differently, but also amazing. So, as we know, in Orlando right now, there's like Hamilton fever going on, because everybody, you know, wants to go or can't get tickets to go.
Yeah, Cheryl saw it last week at the Dr. Phillips.
Yeah. And like I said, it's an amazing show, I was lucky enough to get to see it with him in it, and it was worth every penny to fly down there and do it, because when am I ever going to get to do that again? So,
and that's is that still going on, or is it done? We were
there for the final weekend of it.
Okay, so it's. Okay, I see it right. It was January 11th through the 27th. So
yeah, and that cast will move on without him to San Francisco, where they're like playing, I think, 6 months in San Francisco.
Oh, wow.
So they now have like three different tours touring the country, which is almost unheard of for a musical.
Yeah, that's crazy.
But you know, they're here in Orlando right now. Then they go to Tampa, and I would expect as fast as it sold out, probably within another probably 2 years, it'll be back in Orlando or Tampa. So,
I think I'll have to eventually.
I think you would like it. It's an amazing show, and it's
my problem with musicals is I think I'm too picky with musicals.
Yeah.
If you ask Cheryl, she would say that she keeps saying that I have no interest in seeing it. But I think eventually I will come around, and
it's just one of those musicals that the last one was probably Rent that sort of comes along and completely changes.
Yeah.
Everything. And this is definitely one of those that, I mean, and I love Rent too. It was definitely when it came out. God, how was it, over 20 years ago now?
Yeah,
that was like a musical that just completely blew me away, and I probably listened to that soundtrack God knows how many times.
So. I think that's my problem. I haven't even listened to the soundtrack, and I'm a big music buff. So I think maybe listening to the soundtrack would help me get into the help pique my interest a little bit more in seeing the show.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those where the sound, the cast album is amazing, but the show live is just mind blowing. So
yeah, Speaking of Lin-Manuel, we got some more Disney news aside from Mary Poppins. Reportedly, he is in the works on a Latina princess Disney movie set in the world of Moana.
I don't totally understand that. I know his dad said he's talking to Disney about a sequel to Moana, but the movie would be about a Latina princess, so I don't know exactly how Moana falls in this.
Emily wrote the article, and in it she states the quote that you just read from Lin-Manuel's father, Louis. The quote was interesting. And he said, like you said, he says it's a sequel to Moana. I don't know if he meant maybe it takes in place in kind of the same time frame as Moana.
Yeah, I have no clue. I mean, obviously, you know, there hasn't been a Latina Disney movie princess. There is, you know, Elena on the Elena of Avalor, which is on the Disney Channel. She's in the parks.
yeah.
So it's you know, they've had her, but it would definitely I wouldn't shock me if he isn't working on something with Disney. I mean, they obviously like him with you know the music he wrote for Moana, and then being in Mary Poppins Returns, and it wouldn't surprise me if he's not working with them on a Latina princess movie. So.
And wrapping up with movie talk here, let's talk Oscar noms. They've come out, and of course, Disney, because they own pretty much every movie studio in existence right now. So, if a movie's nominated, there's a good chance it falls under the Disney umbrella. And I'll kind of fire through here, and we can talk some of the categories.
Definitely the biggest thing was Black Panther getting a Best Picture nomination.
Yeah, that's obviously, that was the biggie. Best Picture.
And then the shocker to me was Mary Poppins Returns not getting a Best Picture nomination. It's been interesting to see some of the lack of love that movie has gotten from some people. It just boggles my mind, because it was definitely, as we've had in a previous podcast, it was one of my favorite movies of 2018. But Black Panther getting a nod for Best Picture is really huge. And then this is on top of last week, Black Panther at the Screen Actors Guild Awards won Best Ensemble, which was, I don't think any superhero movie has ever done before, so...
And what's the thing they're doing right now? Black Panther's coming back out in the movie theaters for free.
From now, Iger announced February 1st through 7th, and there's going to be free screenings at AMC.
And so it's I forgot what the reasoning behind it was. Wasn't it for Black History Month?
I think it is.
I think it was in celebration of Black History Month. So, kind of going down the list here, Best Picture, we mentioned Black Panther, which also got Best Production Design. Mary Poppins Returns also got nominated for that.
Yeah, which it definitely deserved.
Best Costume Design, Black Panther, Ruth Carter, and Sandy Powell for Mary Poppins Returns. Best Original Score, Black Panther, Mary Poppins Returns. That was interesting that... I haven't really gone back and listened to the Black Panther score, and the fact that it got nominated kind of made me want to go back and listen to it, because I'm a huge movie score listener.
It's got a really good score, and it's got a really unique, uses a lot of different, you know, musical styles.
I remember it because it has a lot of percussion elements to it, so... And then, speaking of music and soundtracks, Best Original Song, All the Stars, Black Panther, and The Place Where Lost Things Go, Mary Poppins.
Yeah, I mean, that's not my favorite song from that movie.
Not me either. Yeah.
Yeah. It's and I don't think anything's got a shot in hell of winning except for Shallow from A Star Is Born.
Yeah.
Maybe All the Stars would be the one other thing that might have a chance against it.
And then we go into sound editing, mixing. Black Panther got nominated for best sound editing, best sound mixing, and then best visual effects is interesting. Infinity War, Christopher Robin, mm-hmm. and Solo all got nominated for best visual effects.
I hope Infinity War wins.
The other two are Ready Player One.
What is it like? The only other comparison would be Ready Player One as far as the sheer amount of visual effects in the movie.
Yeah.
I hope Infinity War wins because it's that movie is what do they say? Like it's like 60-70% of that movie is effect shots.
Yeah.
And it's outside of some of Bruce Banner in the big giant Hulkbuster suit. That movie is almost flawless when it comes to effects.
Yeah.
Like I said, I think the only contender maybe would be Ready Player One.
Yeah, because you know that movie obviously takes place in
in a virtual world.
So the visual effects are pretty. What's the word I'm looking for?
They were very impressive.
Yeah. And then best animated feature film, Incredibles 2, and then Ralph Breaks the Internet, but not Disney, Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a sham if Into the Spider-Verse doesn't win.
And then, I will throw something if that movie doesn't win against... You know, Incredibles 2 and Ralph Breaks the Internet, while they were good films, they don't hold anything on Into the Spider-Verse.
And I'll admit, I've watched Incredibles 2 again recently, and...
I just watched it again tonight.
I didn't like it as much as I liked it the first time, and I don't know if it's because I was just so hyped for another Incredibles movie. It just...
Tonight was family movie night. And it was added to Netflix. I was gonna rent it at Redbox, and then Jordan this morning before school, he was on Netflix, and he was like, "Dad, Incredibles 2 is on Netflix." So we watched it again tonight, and it's a fun movie. There's, Jack-Jack just steals the movie without him. But the whole screen slaver thing, I can't get into that whole storyline.
Yeah, it just wasn't as good as the first one, and it's just Into the Spider-Verse was just so good.
It was
so unique, and
it's beautiful, it's unique, it's just, it's everything. And then to round it out, of course, Pixar got nominated for best animated short with Bayo, the little dumpling movie.
It was really good. I mean, that's
yeah. Pixar's, second to none when it comes for their short films, which sometimes can be better than their full-length feature films. Their short films always pull at your heartstrings. And Bayo was no exception. So that's it for Disney Oscar noms. So some interesting categories. We'll see what happens. What else did we get today? Oh, we got this today. Hobbs and Shaw. And surprisingly, you actually like this trailer, Mr. Not a fan of Fast and Furious movies. So
I'm curious. I'm not a fan of the Fast and Furious movies. I find them incredibly stupid and boring.
So what made this stick out to you that you actually intrigued you?
The trailer really clicked with, especially with the bits of comedy and the chemistry between Jason Statham and Dwayne The Rock Johnson was just, at least in this trailer, was just like perfect. I mean, just lack of a better term, the sort of like FU attitude these two have against each other.
Yeah, and he literally does that in the trailer.
Yeah.
That part was hilarious when they're on the side of the building or whatever.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
And he whispers her, he's like, I was like, okay, that was funny. yesterday it was starting to make its way around Twitter that the Hobbs and Shaw trailer was going to come out. And I was like, oh God. I was like, God help us. But I was actually pleasantly surprised, and it actually looks pretty entertaining. Like you said, I think the chemistry between these two, I think, you know, there's certain characters in the Fast and Furious franchise that have funny moments, but as a, you know, the Fast and Furious
movies or in the case of Vin Diesel, unintentionally funny moments.
Yeah. that's a whole other topic. But you know, there are funny moments in pretty much all the Fast and Furious movies, but the comedy in this one seems to be turned up a few notches, and it's deliberate.
Yeah.
Whereas the comedy in the Fast and Furious films almost, you know, seems like it's placed in, you know, certain parts of the movie, where this movie seems like they're trying to have a comedic aura about it.
Yeah, I don't mind. I like over the top stuff, you know, when it's done right and it's funny, and I mean, that's part of my thing with the Fast and Furious. It's like you said, they'd have the comedy moments, but then they try to play it like serious, and you're just like, yeah, sure, okay, whatever. and it's just this looks fun, and it's really hard to do a fun like action movie. You know, it's not really something that happens anymore. Most action movies are really, you know, hard-edged and grim now.
Yeah. You know, and let's face it, the Fast and Furious franchise is, I think they're starting filming number 9 this, once this comes out, once Hobbs and Shaw comes out, I think they're starting to film number 9, so they're...
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see how this does, because it's Fast and Furious has, at least in the U.S., has started to sort of fade a little bit.
Yeah.
But... this looks like it'll be fun. No one will be talking about family, and you don't have to hear the word family 40 times.
Yeah.
So
no, this looks good. I'm actually based on this trailer. If this was the only trailer I got, it got my ticket. So I'm excited about it. It looks like it should be a fun flick, and Jason and Dwayne, it looks like their chemistry is pretty awesome in this film. So anyways, moving on, I think that's it. I'm not a book person, but all these Star Wars Galaxy's Edge books that are coming out are kind of intriguing me, and we got what, 6 more books?
Yeah, the title of 6 books. You know, some of them are like, what, one of them's a comic. Yeah, miniseries. It was a Marvel's Star Wars Galaxy Edge miniseries, which will kick off with issue 1 on April 24th of this year. That will go into the Black Spire Outpost and you know, talk about some of the different characters and people who populate the Black Spire outpost. There'll be the Black Spire novel, which will come out in September. That will sort of be a prequel to the Disney Parks experience, where General Leia Organa dispatches her top spy to Batuu in a desperate search for resistance allies. So that will be interesting to me, because, you know, we've heard all about all this interactivity and like this whole thing going on while you're in Galaxy's Edge.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if some of the things in there will tie into whatever is allegedly going on around you in the Black Spire outpost, or whether any of that stuff ends up still happening. So
yeah, you know, kind of like we discussed this what, two episodes ago, about, you know, how the interactivity and the involvement of this universe that they're creating with Galaxy's Edge, how long the interactive things are going to last with as busy as this place is going to be. And Disney's really trying to expand on the Batu and Galaxy's Edge and the Black Spire Outpost with all these comic books and novels. Just last week, we got, what, the Marvel comic book announcement?
Yeah.
That they're going to be making, Marvel's going to be making a comic book series from the world of Galaxy's Edge. So yeah, it's really interesting that Disney's really hopping on this this bandwagon of comic books and novels and graphic novels and go ahead.
Well, there's been Star Wars novels for years now. Even since Disney's taken over, they sort of reset the timeline. You know, there's also going to be like a young adult novel. There's going to be like sort of like a short story. It looks like, yeah, like a book that has like two different stories in it. There'll be a kid's comic. There'll even be a cookbook.
Yeah, that's more my reading level.
And, you know, the Star Wars universe has always been sort of filled out by the comic books and the novels and stuff like that. So this is sort of filling in, you know, more of the story, another way for you to get the story of this new part of the Star Wars universe that you'll be able to step into.
Yeah, because if you think about it, you know, you're going to be, you know, people visiting Galaxy's Edge are, especially the people that have an interest in Star Wars, they're going to want to know what the story is. You know, you go into the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, you know what the story is. You go into Pandora, you know what the story of Avatar is. The thing with Galaxy's Edge is Disney's kind of creating this standalone Star Wars experience, not based on a movie, not based on a, you know, a specific, I shouldn't say based on a movie because it is based on a movie. Yeah. But it's not based on a specific episode 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, you know. It's its own entity, and these books and novels and stuff are, I guess, their way of kind of setting the mood, so to speak, and setting the storyline. So I may actually pick up some of these. I'll have to see how they turn out. And like I said, I'm not a book person, but if it's interesting, I'll definitely sit down and you know, read it. And I like to pick up, I may even pick up the Galaxy's Edge comic book, the kids comic book for Jordan. That may be something he'd like. So
yeah, it's all in preparation for Galaxy's Edge. It was interesting you guys talked about last week what they're doing at Disneyland to prepare for Galaxy's Edge.
Oh, whereas, Project Stardust.
Yeah, whereas we haven't heard a peep here.
Yeah,
about what they're going to do to prepare Hollywood Studios for Galaxy's Edge.
I asked Derek. I was like, so what do you think they're doing for? I forgot what he said, but I was like, "So what are they doing at Hollywood Studios to prepare for Galaxy's Edge?" And he was like, "Nothing."
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting because I mean, it's like, yeah, we're getting the replacement for the Great Movie Ride. We're getting a new show. I hope they got some more of the stuff up their sleeve to occupy all these people's time while they're in the park.
Yeah, and we're getting the new Lightning McQueen show. So there's.
I mean, I would almost consider bringing a parade back. You know, studios used to have a parade. They still have a parade route.
Yeah, when you said that just now, I was like, with all the changes, do they even have a parade route? And I guess they still do, technically.
They still do. I don't know if they still have the... I can't remember if the parade warehouse is still there. But they need to do something. They're going to have to do some more things to occupy people's time. in that park. So I hope maybe coming up here we'll get some more announcements of some things, you know, maybe something they'll, you know, we all know we all want them to finally update Fantasmic, which would draw more people to Fantasmic, and maybe bring back a nighttime show in the Beauty and the Beast theater, or just replace Beauty and the Beast with a new show.
Yeah.
But they're going to have to come up with something. They, you know.
Well, you know, and a lot of these things at Disneyland they're doing are cosmetic things. Like,
yeah,
they're adding more benches. They're fixing curbs. They're, you know, it's a lot of cosmetic things. And I don't know if Hollywood Studios really needs that.
I mean, I'm assuming they've got a plan on how they're going to do this, or, and how they're going to deal with the crowds going into there. And
sure.
And like I said, we got to imagine that they're going to limit the amount of people allowed into that land.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a it's definitely going to be another Wizarding World where they're going to have to shut that land down due to capacity issues. There's no doubt.
Yeah, or unless you have a fast pass to one of the attractions, you're just, you know, you're not getting in.
Yeah. So you know, it'll be interesting. You know, we'll
get to experience it.
Yeah, we'll counting down the months. And we'll be there. So, all right, moving on here really quick. The Warner Brothers studio tour in London. They've been teasing. They were teasing something on Twitter, an announcement of some sort, kind of all week long. They posted a few tweets and stuff. Everybody kind of figured it was for another expansion to their Harry Potter section of their tour. Which, do they have anything else there? I don't know a whole lot about the studio tour in London, the Warner Brothers studio tour. Do they have anything other than Harry Potter there?
I do not know.
That's their, obviously their bread and butter. But yeah. They announced a massive 16,500 square foot Gringotts Wizarding Bank expansion. So we're not going to be the only Gringotts Bank anymore. Although they've had the facade. They've had Diagon Alley, like a small little segment of Diagon Alley there, I think, at the studio tour.
Yeah, but it's pretty much Harry Potter stuff at the London one.
Yeah, you know, I've never studied it because I'm not going to London anytime soon. But I never hear them talk about anything other than Harry Potter stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you'll get to walk through the banking hall. You will get to enter the Lestrange vault.
It sounds like pretty much everything RQ has over here in Escape from Gringotts.
Yeah, except for the actual Lestrange vault. We don't have that.
Yeah, no, we don't have that, but you're going to be able to walk into the lobby with the big marble columns, and, you know, basically be able to experience the Gringotts Bank. So Sounds pretty cool.
And you'll be able to see the costumes and the prosthetics that the goblins wore, and, you know, and the different, you know, you'll be able to see like the pieces of treasure. You know, they're pretty much recreating the vault that you saw in the movie.
Yeah, and there's gonna be a photo op where it looks like you're gonna be able to surround yourself with the treasure found in the Lestrange vault. So that's pretty cool.
And the big thing they get there is, you know, I mean, these new sets, and they're designed and built by many of the actual crew members who worked on the series. So
yeah, it seems like it'll be a pretty cool expansion. Again, I don't know a whole lot about the Warner Brothers the studio tour in London.
Everyone I know who's been, you know, if you're a Harry Potter fan, it's definitely, if you go to London, it's definitely a must-do thing. Everyone I know who's been has really enjoyed it. So
I kind of hate to unless there's something else that we wanted to talk about, but last week SeaWorld, we're gonna move on here to, I hate to end it on a kind of a somber note, but SeaWorld announced the passing of Kayla, one of their orcas. She was 30 years old, and apparently from what SeaWorld has shared with everybody, it was pretty sudden, and it wasn't anything they were expecting. They said on the blog, Kayla began showing signs of discomfort on Saturday, January 26th. The team there at SeaWorld, the veterinarians, began treatment based on a physical exam. And then, unfortunately, her condition worsened as it went through the next couple of days. And she apparently passed away on Monday morning. So, not a good story for, you know, SeaWorld to have after all this great news about them. You know, as I posted on Twitter, you know, everybody becomes an orca expert when one passes away.
Oh yeah,
at SeaWorld. So, you know, I have friends that work at SeaWorld with the animals. And I know, I not on a extremely personal level, and you know, just, you know, even, you know, the care that these animals get at SeaWorld is second to none.
Yeah, I mean, she was born at SeaWorld San Antonio, and has been here in Orlando since 2006. So, I mean, she was born at SeaWorld, and, you know, 30 is definitely a little earlier than, you know, her normal life expectancy.
Yeah, there's numbers out there. You know, like I said, when an orca dies at SeaWorld, everybody starts throwing numbers around, life expectancy, this and that, and the... I could sit here and spout off, you know, stats... but you know,
and I believe now that leaves only five orcas.
Yeah, I believe it's either three females and two males, or I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
Three females and two males. And of course, you know, SeaWorld, they've announced that they've ended their breeding program, so we're not going to be getting any more orcas born in captivity. Which, you know, again, it's a very touchy subject, yeah. You know, because you have the Blackfish Brigade out there, who don't know anything. They just, you know, they're all empty the tanks, this and that. But on the opposite end of the spectrum, you have people like me and people like you, and, really, I'm kind of glad to see the amount of support Thrill Geek viewers have with SeaWorld, because every time I post an article on Facebook or Twitter, I get bombarded with, you know, the whole Blackfish, like I said, that whole thing. But surprisingly, and our article on Facebook went crazy. I mean, I must have been one of the first, you know, first few sites to report it. And our Facebook post, I only deleted maybe two comments that were like anti-SeaWorld. And one of the first things I posted were, you know, please keep your comments respectful, because everybody knows on Thrill Geek that, you know, me, you, and, you know, everybody I know knows that I support SeaWorld and all that they do, all the animal rescues that they do. You know, I support everything they do. So this unexpected death was hard to swallow. So we send our best out there to everybody at SeaWorld. Hopefully, you know, I guess they're gonna do what do they call it? I'm no scientist here.
Autopsy,
I guess you could call it, to figure out the exact cause of death. So, SeaWorld's been pretty open about that. And then if we hear anything more, I'll update our, the article I posted about her death. Anything we hear from SeaWorld, I'll post it on there. So,
let's end on a little positive note.
Like I said,
does have the Seven Seas Food Festival kicking off February 9th through May 5th.
Yeah, me and Derek missed this last week. This is one of the things that we missed. So I figured
this year, they're going to, starting February 15th, you're going to be able to enjoy the food festival part, at least on Friday evenings from 4 to 9. Which I think that's a really smart idea. I know in the past they've experimented with having the food booths open during the week, during like the spring break time. But I don't think that did as well as they hoped. So they're trying Friday evenings, which has been something they've done. They did with the Christmas celebration, is having it on Friday, having it open on Friday nights. Back during the holidays before it went like daily. So I think they're going to try this with the food festival too, of having Friday evenings, having the park stay open till 9, even during like obviously slower times like in February. So you'll be able to go after work on Friday nights and enjoy the food and beverage. But they announced some of the concerts.
And can I just say, Seven Seas Food Festival is, especially with the lanyards, it's such a good value.
They have a deal, especially if you're an annual pass holder. I think if you buy in advance, you can get the 15 one, but you get 20 punches instead of 15.
You get like an additional 5 punches for free.
Yeah, for $65. Which comes out after tax. It comes out to like, I think, $390 or $380 a punch.
Yeah, so I mean, if you're there with your girlfriend, boyfriend, you guys split it, you know, and that's $30 a person for how long's the festival?
It runs through
the middle of March, yeah, right? Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah, Friday, Saturdays and Sundays through May.
Yeah, so
we got plenty of time and we haven't posted the menus yet on the food site. On the website, I think they just posted them on SeaWorld's website. There's a lot of new stuff this year that looks really good, and we'll probably get a guide up there soon. But the concerts, there's some little something for everybody. You know, we go through it here. February 9th, The Fray. February 10th, Sugar Ray. February 16th, Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons. February 17th, Little River Band. February 23rd, Flo Rida. Yes, we can't have a Mardi Gras or some other spring festival without Flo Rida showing up. February 24th, 98 Degrees. March 2nd, Lifehouse. March 3rd, Cole Swindell. March 9th, Lee Bryce with Low Cash. March 10th, I Love the 90s, featuring En Vogue, Ken and Play, Coolio, Tone Loc, Rob Bass, Young MC. I've already been told I will be going to that.
That should be a good one.
March 16th, Brett Michaels. And March 17th, is it Gente de Zona? I've actually seen these guys before. That's probably where like the more of the Spanish stuff's going to start happening. That's the first half of the concerts this year. They'll announce the second half of the festival later in the coming weeks. So,
and that starts February 9th, right?
Yeah, February 9th, and all the concerts, they take place in Bayside Stadium. There are some different reserve seats you can purchase that I think run, depending on where they are, anywhere from $50 to $10. And then it's first come, first served. And some of those people get there early to get those seats.
Yeah, there are some people from the few times I went last year during this during the Seven Seas Food Festival, there are some people that are pretty dedicated to some of those concerts. They want to be front row. And of course, unless there's a few concerts I see here on the list that I Love the 90s one on March 10th.
I definitely expect that one's going to be, I expect to be packed.
Oh yeah, it's got Coolio in Vogue. Yeah,
I'm sure 98 Degrees will be packed with a lot of millennial women. Flo Rida.
Brett Michaels is usually
Brett Michaels will be packed too.
Yeah,
there's definitely someone here that'll definitely be pretty popular.
But there's a few shows that start at 5. Other than that, the concerts start at 6 p.m.
Which I feel is a little bit later than they've done in the past. I feel like some of the shows previous years, it was like 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
They would do some of these. So to me, that's better to start a little bit later. You'll still be able to jump from one, as we've done sometimes in the past, literally go to SeaWorld to see one concert and then jump over to Universal to catch the other one.
Mardi Gras. Night.
Yeah, so...
So yeah, we got, you know, we're kind of in a segue right here for right now for special events. I mean, we got Flower and Garden going on soon.
Yeah, we still got Festival of Arts going on.
Festival of the Arts is going on at Epcot.
Mardi Gras and Seven Seas kicks off February 9th. And then yeah, after Festival of the Arts wraps up, there's literally like what, a week break, and then you get into Flower and Garden, which is going to have even more concerts this year than in the past. And then Busch Gardens, was it Food and Wine Festival, kicks off.
I forgot that's coming up too, isn't it?
That kicks off March 16th because they have their real music festival going on right now. So
yeah.
There's always, especially with Busch Gardens and SeaWorld, there is pretty much their whole thing now is there is a festival, some type of festival going on every single weekend.
Yeah, they toyed around with it, you know, these past couple years, I think, to try and get a feel for it. And I think they saw that, especially with the Seven Seas Food Festival, they saw that it was a hit and it drawed in the, you know, especially the locals. It's a great way to attract the locals. Yeah, they're definitely spanning with these special festivals even more this year. So, all right, I think that's it for this week. We pretty much went over everything we got coming up. This will be posted on Monday. What else we got coming up here? Me and Emily will be at Rock the Universe Saturday night, so I'll talk about
that.
Have
fun with that.
Deal with the crazy kids at Rock the Universe. We'll be there for that. What else?
Yeah, well, we got all, like, and of course, you know, coming up, we'll have Mardi Gras and Seven Seas Food Festival coverage. Yeah, it's going to be a crazy weekend. That weekend of trying to cram in both.
Yeah.
You know, we got more videos come, obviously all kinds of stuff coming soon here. And remember, we are at Thrill Geek on Twitter and Instagram, facebook.com/thrillgeek, that's the home to most of our live streams, and we're always posting articles up there. youtube.com/thrillgeek for the latest videos. We did a little vlog of the Epcot Festival of the Arts that is up there, so check that out if you want to see what going to the Festival of the Arts is like. We've got a whole selection of Tokyo Disney videos, and we still got a few more coming. So, and we'll obviously have Mardi Gras and Seven Seas Food Festival videos coming up there soon. And there's a couple of new Disney videos we're working on that'll be up there within the next couple of weeks. So all kinds of videos coming to the YouTube channel. Remember, thrillgeek.com for the latest in theme park and pop culture news. And since Emily's joined us, we are pumping out a lot more articles than we were before. And we've got our new thing is our guides. We already got our Halloween Horror Nights guide up. It doesn't really have any information in it, but we have our Halloween Horror Nights guide up for.
Yeah, I've Thrill Geek was never designed or will be a vacation planning website. It'll always be a simple way for people to get theme park news. But I wanted to introduce something that people could go to, especially the things that happen in Orlando that have several announcements, that have several pieces of information. I kind of wanted to condense those into, as you've seen on Twitter and Facebook, called Quick Start Guides. Like for Halloween Horror Nights and Mardi Gras, and you know, some of the festivals like we just discussed, all these festivals that go on, they have several announcements. They have food announcements, they have concert announcements. you know, they have all these announcements, and I came up with this idea of coming up with these quick start guides as a way for people to get kind of all the news in one big, in one long article, instead of every time a new concert's announced, posting a new article. Every time a new haunted house is announced for Halloween Horror Nights, adding a new article. It just makes it easier. It's more convenient. And I added them to the website. You can see it at the top of the website, on the top where you have all the home news videos. There's a drop down menu now that says guides, and right now I got Disney and Universal. And I'm sure we'll do some more here, for maybe one for Seven Seas Food Festival at SeaWorld. And like we said, Flower and Garden coming up here at Epcot, we can maybe do one for that. So yeah, it was just a way for me to kind of condense all these things that have several announcements into one piece of information that we can just go and update and say, go here for this. So, you know, and we'll maybe post some tips and tricks on there, you know, some things, some ideas that we come up with, especially Halloween Horror Nights. 'Cause you know, me and Barry were there religiously. So
all the time. and speaking of those guides, we have updated the Universal Mardi Gras 2019 guide with the latest announcements of the food, some new food coming this year, and also the couple of new concerts they've announced. So please check out our guide on ThrillGeek.com.
And the merchandise. Remember,
yes, and merchandise. Yep. And remember, you are listening to the Thrill Geek podcast. We're available wherever you can get a podcast. You can get the Thrill Geek podcast.
And leave us a review on iTunes, as always. We greatly appreciate that, as always. Yeah. I went and I looked at some of the other podcast apps, and I think iTunes is really the only one. I couldn't even find it on the Google Podcast app to leave a download. So,
a review.
Yeah, it was really bizarre. So please take a few seconds to leave us a review on iTunes. As always, we greatly appreciate that. Thanks again, guys, for listening, and we will see you guys again next week.
See you in the parks.